Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a bizarre story that emerged after a nine-month investigation by Al Jazeera indicating Yasser Arafat might have been poisoned with polonium. This has led to today's filing in a French court by Arafat's widow Suha, asking for an investigation into her husband's death 8 years ago in a French military hospital. A longtime CIA operative who worked in Lebanon and the West Bank, Robert Baer, joins us to discuss why the Palestinian authorities have approved the exhumation of Yasser Arafat's body and what a new autopsy may find. Then we'll look into Syria's killing machine, its armed forces, whose officer corps, dominated by the minority Alawites, is showing signs of fissures with the recent defection of an Assad family friend, the son of the former defense minister, General Manaf Tlass. Dr. David Lesh, the author of The New Line of Damascus, Bashar al-Assad and Modern Syria, joins us. He knows the Assads and General Tlass, and we will get some insight into the inner workings of a ruthless family dynasty holding onto power by killing any and all Syrians who might oppose them. Then finally, we'll be joined in the studio by Amnesty International's lead crisis researcher, Donatella Rivera, who risked her life by crossing the border into Syria, where she recently spent weeks inside 23 villages following the path of the Syrian army, documenting a trail of atrocities, war crimes, and crimes against humanity inflicted on innocent men, women, and children. We will discuss why the world is doing nothing to stop this ongoing slaughter of innocents. Joining us now is Robert Baer, a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife, Dana, is The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
Great to be here.
And the story behind this poisoning, which is, as I mentioned, is a little strange. Al Jazeera apparently spent the last 9 months doing a documentary, which they just released. They were given a knapsack full of material from the widow of Arafat, Suha. That involved some clothing, some blood and urine stained underwear, and a toothbrush, which was then sent to the Institute for Radiation Physics in Lausanne, Switzerland, who have come up with findings that there are traces of polonium. So let's start with the lab in Switzerland. What's your understanding about that, Bob?
Well, I think it's a serious piece of work they've done there. They went to a well-known lab. Polonium-210, as I understand, doesn't occur in nature. If indeed this stuff was on his personal items at the time of his death, would strongly suggest he'd been assassinated. The only thing you do with polonium-210 in a case like this is kill somebody. As we know, the Russians killed a dissident in Moscow using polonium-210. They wanted to hide their hands. It's not usually looked for in the tox screen. And what the question I have is, why at this time has this come up now? I know there's always been a suspicion that he might have been assassinated, but it was more on the lines of conspiracy theories.
Well, apparently the physicist who's been doing the François Bochud, the director of the institute, told Nature that they were actually prompted by the Litvinenko that you mentioned, his case in London, to do this search, and that they found traces of polonium on some blood and urine-stained underwear. And polonium, of course, 210 has a half-life of 138 days. And given that Arafat's been dead for 8 years, that's 21 half-lives. So, in effect, that means that the amount of polonium in the samples and in Arafat's body would have been about a million times. What poisoned him, if indeed that happened, would have had to have been a million times greater in volume.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's forensics is getting so good with assassinations and murder and the rest of it that I can't even keep up with the speed of it. I've been working on an assassination investigation for a couple of years, and it's amazing what the scientists can dig up on this stuff, and including poisoning from an isotope like this. So it doesn't really surprise me, and I think, as I understand, and you get a little bit out of my expertise, is that you have to look for traces of this stuff. You just wouldn't find it. You know, if they found you or me dead in Los Angeles, the police wouldn't be looking for polonium-210. They'd actually have to be looking for it.
Well, given that, as I say, that the Swiss scientist in charge of the Institute for Radiation Physics in Lausanne, Switzerland, he thinks that he's sort of 50% sure that this is polonium poisoning. The widow, Suhar, has gone to the French authorities and opened a complaint trying to get a reinvestigation of his death 8 years ago in a military hospital. She, as I mentioned, handed over Arafat's medical file and a duffel bag of his belongings, including a fur hat, a woolen cap, some of his hair, a toothbrush, and clothing with his urine and blood stains to Al Jazeera, who in turn handed it over to this radiation lab in Lausanne, Switzerland. Now, on the Palestinian side, Tawfiq Tiwari, who was the intelligence chief under Arafat, he, of course, is blaming the Israelis and holding them responsible. Apparently, a Jordanian doctor, Abdullah al-Bashir, has been delegated by the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, to do the autopsy. They've invited the Swiss scientists to Ramallah to take samples from Arafat's remains. I'm not sure when that'll happen. So, Robert Baer, what do you think will be the next step here if they find polonium?
Oh, I think this is a momentous event. I mean, the West Bank in particular is on the verge of a third intifada. If it's found out by a reputable lab that Arafat had been assassinated with polonium-210, the Palestinians are not going to wait to accuse the Israelis. I think this could push that whole area over. You know, you just got to look at a map. It's Jordan is on the edge. Syria, as we know, has slipped into a civil war. Lebanon is an incipient civil war. And then you've got Egypt, which isn't far behind. You have the whole region. You know, throwing more fuel into the region like this is the last thing we need. And it's the last thing the Israelis need. And there's no way that the Israelis can come out and say we didn't do it and have anybody believe them among the Palestinians. The Israelis have a long history of assassinating people with exotic poisons. You know, Khalid Mishal, they tried to kill with a derivative of a painkiller. They failed, but it was only because two of their operatives got caught, and they provided the antidote. This guy lived. There's a few other cases. The Eastern Europeans, of course, kill with exotic poisons. The Markov case, they used ricin poison. They poked a guy in the leg with an umbrella. So people are going to jump to the worst conclusions. I frankly don't see why the Israelis would want to kill Arafat at the time. He was weakened. He was not a force to be reckoned with. He wasn't causing any damage. But again, in a volatile area like this, the conclusion that he was assassinated is a disaster.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert Baer, a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon and the West Bank. I take it you knew Tawfiq Tiwari, the intelligence guy.
I used to work with the PLO. Yeah, I did. Right. I knew a lot of them.
So, you had difficulties as a representative of the U.S. intelligence service of even getting to these guys, wasn't it? Because the Israelis kept assassinating them. They didn't want the U.S. to even talk to the Palestinians.
One of my best friends was assassinated in Paris. He was getting out of a car in front of a hotel. Two guys walked up. They looked like skinheads. They had a pistol in a gym bag, went up and stuck the pistol in the nape of his neck and killed him. And he was sort of our main contact on counterterrorism. The Israelis want us to see the West Bank and Gaza and the whole Palestinian issue through their eyes. I mean, as they would. This is what intelligence services do. Arafat let's be fair about this, was not a good guy. And he was involved in a lot of terrorism. This is not anybody's imagination. He conducted a very violent war against Israel for 3 decades. Let's not look to the right or the wrong of this. And if the Israelis did, and I reiterate, this is complete speculation, and I don't think we'll ever get the facts on it. It would fit their modus operandi. But on the other hand, it would also fit the modus operandi of a faction inside the PLO. For instance, why not Hamas? Get rid of Arafat, Hamas takes over. Is a predominant influence among the Palestinians. This is the problem with these assassinations, is they immediately run to conspiracy theories, and we never sort of get to the bottom of them.
Well, Tawari, Arafat's former intelligence chief, of course, is saying that Palestinians were involved in either slipping the poison into his food or medicine. I'm curious, though, when you mentioned why would the Israelis do it. Arafat was not a Mandela by any stretch of the imagination, and he was pretty corrupt. His wife, Sua, and her rather greedy family were kind of the bag men for the operation, and basically, as I say, he was spent. It's hard to understand what the motive would be at that point, since he.
I don't understand. I think he's done more damage to the Palestinians than any Palestinian has to their whole cause.
Right.
When he turned to attacking civilian targets in 1965, when he started this, it was an enormous mistake. Which ultimately ended up in the Palestinians losing, or Jordan losing the West Bank, and on and on and on. I go on about Arafat. But do intelligence agencies make mistakes? You know, where do I even start on that? It's what's really going to be, I keep going back to it, is the consequences. The Middle East is not a happy place right now. And if I were the Israelis, I'd be extremely worried about what's going on their borders. It's a wave. The speed of contamination in the Middle East is unpredictable. Let me put it that way.
Well, clearly, the Palestinian cause, or even the issue, or even any reporting has almost gone into a black hole. I mean, obviously, Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, is actually quite happy, I think, to distract everybody to talk about Iran all the time, and we're also distracted by Syria. But what you were saying earlier is that there's been a slow burn going on in the Palestinian territories. My understanding is that Al Jazeera some time back released the so-called Palestinian Papers, which indicated that the Palestinian Authority have just been pathetic in terms of their negotiations with the Israelis. They've run rings around them. I imagine young Palestinians are very frustrated in the same generational way that young Arabs are throughout the Middle East in terms of the Arab Spring.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's a corrupted leadership that hasn't done well by them. And but it remains that as bad as Arafat was, he was their George Washington in a sense, and he's the closest anybody brought the Palestinians to autonomy. And killing him at that point, when he was under siege, could be that very spark that this whole thing off.
And that of course would echo through the region, as you mentioned, right? I mean, it seems like if you're following events in Egypt, things are hanging by a thread there. Now the Supreme Court is, the new leader has forced his way into a parliament to open parliament, which the Supreme Court has shut down. Then he opens it up, and then just today the parliament has then decreed that it's closed. So that's a very...
Well, let me go back to Lebanon. I have to read the Israeli press to see this stuff, but you've got Israeli military officers paying for public consumption that they're about to go to war in Lebanon, and that the Lebanese have, so the Hezbollah's got 60,000 rockets facing Israel. I don't know what it's going to take for Hezbollah to fire those things. Would it be a spark in the West Bank? Would it be fighting inside Lebanon? Could Iran order it? I just don't know anymore. But the point is, the American press is so numb by the Middle East and what direction it's going, especially after Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, this thing could very easily veer out of control. And, you know, and what we shouldn't do is blame any administration for this specifically. It's beyond our control.
But in effect, what you're saying, Robert Baer, is that we focused so much of our lives and treasure on these completely useless misadventures in Iraq and in Afghanistan, that at the very moment that we, the American people, are just exhausted by these misadventures and this waste of lives and treasure in the Middle East and are starting to get out of the place, you're saying
it's worth spent force.
Right.
I don't care who's president.
Right.
They're not going to be able to draw the Americans into a third war in the Middle East. The expense in lives and money, we're tired. These two wars are not winnable. They've emptied the treasury of trillions of dollars, and now we're just starting to see the beginning of problems.
So in other words, as we're a spent force and are getting out of it, the real problems are beginning. We've been chasing ghosts up until now, but some serious problems are developing. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. I think what's happening in Egypt is really, you know, the fact that they convened parliament and that the military opposed it and said it was illegal is a very bad omen. That is, you know, I keep my fingers crossed. I was trained to think the worst is coming, and I hope I'm absolutely wrong. But, you know, going back to the Americans numb by this, I mean, I spent my entire life in the Middle East, and I'm numb by it. I can barely pick up the newspaper and say, oh, no, here's another place that's sort of on the edge. The good news is, you know, we've gone now 2 years with the Arab Spring, and nothing absolutely catastrophic has happened, unless you happen to be a Syrian.
Right, but on the plus side, a lot of decrepit and corrupt dictators have gone. There's still a lot left, but you can...
And let them go, every one of them.
Right.
Oh, they're a disaster, and that includes the Gulf princes as well.
And they're the good guys now, right, with Al Jazeera.
They're a pillar of stability, you know, the Gulf right now. And I've always been scared what happens if that place goes under. There was a Saudi cleric that was rammed, apparently, by the police.
Yeah.
Two people were killed, a Shia. And what does that mean for Saudi Arabia?
Right. Well, also, you have to ask yourself...
I was going to say, just
in closing, you have to ask yourself what's the motivation for Al Jazeera pushing this story as well. I'm afraid we've run out of time, Robert Baer, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Robert Baer, a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He is the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife, Dana, is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with someone who knows the Assads and the general who just defected. ويا بشار ويا كذاب وتضرب انت وهالخطاب الحريه